Hi, this is the September issue of SuperSTEM, and on the front cover, how sneakers took over the world. Jump back in time to see how engineers designed your favorite shoes, and we'll get to that article. But first, Mini STEM reads, Mac and not cheese. For many kids, nothing beats a bowl of creamy macaroni and cheese. Kraft is one of the most popular boxed mac and cheese brands. It recently introduced a new version of the food that's missing one key ingredient, cheese. Kraft's newest mac and cheese is vegan or made without animal products. We wanted to create a plant-based mac and cheese that still had the yummy taste and smooth creaminess that people love, says Robert Scott, who works at Kraft Heinz. These traits normally come from the protein and fat in cheese and cow's milk. Kraft worked with a company that makes plant-based foods to brainstorm and develop the recipe. Food scientists tested more than 100 recipes for the plant-based mac and cheese. They chose a formula that replaces cheese and milk with powders from coconuts and fava beans. Corn and tapioca, made from a root vegetable called cassava, help thicken the sauce. Would you dig into a bowl? At the bottom of the page is a graph showing how many mac and cheese boxes are eaten in a month and by how many people. Also, under Mini STEM reads, under the microscope. How do scientists study things that are really tiny? They look at them under a microscope. Microscopes use lenses and reflected light to create magnified images or ones that make objects look much larger than they are in real life. The images are useful for scientists and they can also be beautiful. Each year, the company Olympus gives awards for the most stunning pictures taken with microscopes. In 2023, the competition received 640 images from scientists and photographers all over the world. The winning photo showed a young sea star's nerves. These bundles of fibers carry messages through the sea star's body. The tiny sea creature measured less than 0.5 inches, that's 1.3 centimeters across. Laurent Formery, a scientist at Stanford University in California, took the photo. Formery combined several microscope images to get the picture's multicolored effect. It's so beautiful what you can do with the microscope, he says. And now on to the cover article, The Surprising Story of Sneakers. And we'll look for these STEM words. Engineer, a person who designs solutions to problems often by building things. Friction, a force created when two surfaces rub together and resist movement. Kinetic energy, the energy of an object in motion. Potential energy, stored energy often due to an object's position. Now here's the article. Your favorite kicks are the result of more than 150 years of engineering and design. A basketball player dashes down the court. A runner sprints across the finish line. A kid like you strolls outside on their way to the park. What do these people have in common? They're all probably wearing sneakers. Today, millions of people of all ages wear these comfortable shoes. You can find sneakers specially designed for every sort of activity in all kinds of fun, colorful styles. It wasn't always this way. The first sneakers were created more than 100 years ago. They looked a lot different from the sneakers on your feet today. Over time, engineers have improved the design of sneakers to make them faster, lighter, and cooler looking, too. Imagine you're a tennis player facing a tough opponent. You dart across the court, your racket in the air, only you're not wearing sneakers on your feet. You're wearing a pair of stiff leather shoes with tiny heels. That's what many athletes wore in the mid-1800s, Back then, there were no special shoes for sports. That began to change in the 1870s. At that time, a new sport called lawn tennis was becoming popular. Players had to run back and forth across grass courts that were often wet. So they started lacing up a new type of shoe, sneakers. The first sneakers were made of canvas, a thick fabric used to make a ship's sails. Their soles, or bottoms, were made from rubber. This tough, flexible material kept tennis players' feet dry. Plus, it was strong enough to handle all the sprinting across the court. Rubber was not a new material. Indigenous peoples of Brazil and Central America had long worn footwear made of rubber, says Elizabeth Semmelhack. She studies the history of shoes at Bata Shoe Museum in Toronto, Canada. They would drain a sticky liquid called sap from rubber trees and use it to create a form of waterproof footwear. Back in 1839, inventor Charles Goodyear added a chemical called sulfur to natural rubber that kept it from breaking down in very cold and very hot temperatures. By the late 1800s, rubber was being used to make everything from bike tires to car parts to sneaker soles. Rubber soles cushion the foot, and they create friction, a rubbing force when in contact with the ground. That helps athletes move without slipping, but rubber is also heavy. When it comes to running, weight is a big deal, says Jeff Burns. He's a scientist who works with U.S. Olympic teams. Cutting the weight by 100 grams, about the weight of a bar of soap, could help athletes run a mile about 4 seconds faster. That's a huge advantage in competitive races. In 1971, a track and field coach named Bill Bowerman had a problem. He had just co-founded a sneaker company called Nike, and he wanted to make a lightweight version of sneakers that had the same cushion and grip as rubber-soled shoes. One morning, Bowerman was eating a waffle when he got an idea. What if he created rubber sneaker soles with a pattern like a waffle iron? To test the idea, he poured liquid rubber into a waffle iron to create a mold for a new sneaker sole. After several tries, his idea worked. The soles he made had areas that were super thin, which kept the shoe light. The parts, with raised squares, helped the sole grip the ground. The design became known as the Waffle Trainer. It was the first big hit from Nike. It kicked off innovations in sole textures that are still happening today. Just look at the bottom of your sneakers. Around the same time, shoe designers were working on a new material for sneaker soles called foam. This rubber-like substance has air blown into it, making it lighter than rubber. Foam gives runners another big advantage. As a runner presses down on the foam soles, the air pockets in the material squeeze together. The soles absorb the runner's kinetic energy and change it to potential energy. When the runner lifts their foot, the foam expands like a spring. It gives the runner a boost of speed. ASICS was the first company to use foam in sneaker soles in 1967. In 2013, Adidas introduced sneakers with a new type of thick foam that was more bouncy. It gave runners an even bigger boost. Today, the soles of most running shoes contain squishy foam. Over the years, designers have created sneakers for different sports, from basketball to skateboarding. And sneakers are no longer just for sports. People wear them for all kinds of activities, from running around a track to running errands. Sneaker collectors wait in long lines for limited editions and trade old retro styles online. To keep up with demand, companies release sneakers painted by famous artists and designed by fashion icons. What kind of sneakers will you wear next? And there are photos associated with this article highlighting some of the highlights in the development of sneakers. Next up, creature feature, meet the toucan. What you never knew about these fancy flyers. Sweet tooth, more like sweet beak. Fruits like berries, figs, and guavas make up 96% of a toucan's diet. By eating a lot of fruit, toucans help trees reproduce. After toucans eat a fruit, they fly off and later poop out the seeds. Some seeds grow into new fruit trees. But toucans don't just munch on fruit. They're also predators. They hunt insects, frogs, and even baby birds. And there are photos associated with this article detailing more about the toucan. Ask your parent, teacher, or guardian to review the photos and the facts associated with them. Now on to physical science and the secrets of slime. Discover how sticky, gooey mucus helps all kinds of animals survive, including you. And we'll look for these stem words. Mucus, a slimy substance produced by an animal's body. Venom, a toxic substance that some living things inject into victims by biting or stinging. Matter, anything that takes up space, usually in the form of a solid, liquid, or gas. Protein, a complex substance made by living things that helps grow and repair cells. First up, the Komodo dragon. Growing up to 10 feet, 3 meters long, the Komodo dragon is the world's largest lizard. The giant reptile has a deadly secret. Its spit is full of toxic mucus. This slimy stuff helps the Komodo dragon hunt in the Southeast Asian country of Indonesia, where it lives. It waits for an animal like a water buffalo to cross its path. Then it strikes. As it bites down, venom-filled goo oozes between its teeth and into its victim's wounds. If the creature escapes, the venom will kill it in a few days. The Komodo dragon uses its powerful nose to sniff out the body so it can gobble the meal up. Next, snails. Imagine dragging your bare belly over splintered wood and jagged rocks. That's what slugs and snails do all the time. Surprisingly, moving over rough surfaces doesn't hurt these animals. That's all thanks to mucus. Two different kinds of slime help a snail move, says Antonio Cerullo. He's a biologist who has studied snail slime. On a flat surface like a table, a snail's body releases mucus that's slippery. That helps the snail glide easily over bumps in its path. But if the snail crawls on a surface that's slanted upward, it starts producing a stickier type of mucus. This substance allows the snail to cling to anything, even upside down. And next, the hagfish. A hungry shark swims through the Pacific Ocean, searching for its next meal. It spots a hagfish, an eel-like animal, resting on the seafloor. The shark moves in and takes a bite. But instead of food, its mouth suddenly fills with gooey slime. The hagfish is one of nature's most impressive slime makers. It has 81 slime-making organs on each side of its body. When a predator attacks a hagfish, these glands release mucus and tiny, silky fibers. These threads expand and mix with the salt water, clogging the attacker's mouth and gills so the hagfish can wriggle away. There are other animals that use slime for self-defense, but the hagfish is by far the slimiest. No other animal compares, says biologist Yu Zhang, who has studied hagfish. So what is mucus? Mucus is a strange type of matter. You can hold it in your hand like a solid, but it can also drip like a liquid. What makes mucus so special? Mucus gets its slimy properties from the substances it contains. A mixture of sugars, salts, fats, and proteins gives it a spongy structure that holds in water. Different proteins can make mucus sticky, stretchy, or slippery. Scientists are studying mucus to better understand these proteins. We now move on to the fungoid frog. You breathe in and out through your mouth and nose, but if you were a frog, you would also breathe through your skin. This special ability allows frogs to take in oxygen even when they're underwater. Unfortunately, it also means their delicate skin can absorb disease-causing germs. To keep these germs out, frogs are covered in a layer of slippery mucus. This slime doesn't just slow down potential germy invaders. It also contains special proteins that can kill many kinds of germs. One frog species, called the fungoid frog, has proteins in its mucus that attack the germ that causes the flu. Scientists hope to use these substances to create treatments that help people recover from the illness. Well, now on to the slime in you. We'll begin with the eyes. A thin layer of mucus helps keep your eyes moist. It also helps your eyelids glide smoothly over your eyeballs when you blink. Your nose. When you breathe in, sticky mucus in your nose traps dust, germs, and other particles from the air. When you're sick, spaces in your skull, called sinuses, pump out extra snot to fight harmful germs. Your intestines. Slippery mucus keeps food moving through your intestines. This mucus is home to helpful bacteria. These tiny organisms help your body further break down food before waste exits your body. Your lungs. Your lungs are lined with mucus and tiny hairs called cilia. The mucus catches particles that make it past your nose. The cilia sweep the particles and mucus back to your mouth so you can cough them out. Your stomach. Your stomach contains strong acid, a harsh liquid that helps you break down your food. A mucus lining keeps the acid from damaging your stomach and from leaking out and harming your other organs. On now to Earth Science, digging into Minecraft. This popular video game features rocks and minerals that exist in real life. For Minecraft players, there's no limit to building. You can create grand pirate ships, massive castles, or even cities filled with skyscrapers. No matter what a player builds, it all starts with blocks. Minecraft blocks are cubes that represent different materials like wood and metal. There are more than 150 types of Minecraft blocks. Many of these blocks are based on real minerals and rocks. They're similar to what you would see in the real world, says Erica Rader. She's a geologist who studies rocks. But many Minecraft blocks have different properties than the real versions. How do Minecraft blocks compare with actual rocks and minerals? Well, you're about to find out. We'll look for these STEM words during the article. Mineral, a non-living solid material with a crystal-like structure. Rock, a non-living solid material made of one or more minerals. Geologist, a scientist who studies Earth's surface and structure. We begin with the rock obsidian. In Minecraft, players create obsidian blocks by pouring water onto lava. You can use these black and purple blocks to build portals to another world. In reality, obsidian isn't magical. It's a glassy, black, igneous rock that can be carved into sharp tools. Like the Minecraft version, real obsidian forms when lava cools quickly in air or water. Next, diamond. Diamonds aren't just pretty. They're also the hardest material on Earth. People use them to drill, cut, and polish other tough materials. In Minecraft, diamonds can be made into super strong armor and weapons. This wouldn't work well in the real world. That's because while diamonds are hard, they crack easily if you strike them. Next mineral is amethyst. On Earth, amethyst is a shimmery purple mineral mainly used in jewelry. It's found inside hollow rocks called geodes. Geodes form when lava cools and hardens into rock and mineral-rich water seeps inside. Over time, the water evaporates, leaving behind crystals. In Minecraft, amethyst is used to craft spyglasses and tinted glass. There's a graph showing the types of rock. The three main types of rock form in different ways. Igneous rock forms when rock melts deep underground, then cools and hardens again. Sedimentary rock forms when layers of sediment, like dirt and sand, get pressed together. Metamorphic rock forms when underground rock is placed under extreme heat and pressure, but doesn't melt. The next rock is lapis lazuli. Lapis lazuli can give items special abilities or give color to things like fireworks and glass. In the real world, lapis lazuli is a metamorphic rock. That means it formed as a result of intense heat and pressure deep underground. For centuries, people have ground up lapis lazuli to create bright blue paint. Next, sandstone. Sandstone is a sedimentary rock that forms when sand is pressed together over time. Both in Minecraft and on Earth, sandstone often forms in deserts and along bodies of water. Sandstone has the same uses in the game as in real life, as a strong building material. Many real-life temples and statues are made from sandstone. And continuing with Minecraft, we built a better city with Minecraft. How can cities be made safer, more eco-friendly, and easier to live in for all people? Last spring, fifth grader Olivia Sopeltseva and four classmates set out to see what was possible for their hometown of New York City. They represented their school, PS 58 in Staten Island, in a Minecraft competition. The competition was called the Battle of the Boroughs Minecraft Challenge. Student teams across New York City used Minecraft to design and build spaces that solve problems cities face. In each round, the students had to design around different constraints or limitations. In the final round, teams from each New York City borough had just 90 minutes to complete their designs. The all-girls Staten Island team won first place in their division. Their design included fountains flowing with rainwater, electric buses, and charging stations for electric scooters. Olivia's favorite part was a station where people could get help from service dogs. There's a solution to every problem, she says. Next up, under the heading of Cool STEM Jobs, I care for homeless pets. Vet tech Genesis Redden cares for the pets of people experiencing homelessness. Dog, cat, rabbit, iguana, name a pet, and Genesis Redden has likely cared for it. She works as a veterinary technician, or vet tech, at an animal hospital in Los Angeles, California. She helps veterinarians treat pets that people bring in from home. But when she leaves the hospital, her work is not done. Redden keeps her car stocked with pet food, blankets, and medical supplies. As Redden drives around the city, she looks for pet owners who are experiencing homelessness. She asks if they need supplies or medical care for their pets. Redden volunteers with Project Street Vet, an organization that provides health care to the pets of unhoused people. In 2023, about 650,000 people in the U.S. experienced homelessness. Of those, an estimated 65,000 own pets. Like all pets, these animals need regular vet visits and care when they are sick. "We bring the animal hospital to the street," says Redden. Redden spoke with SuperStem about her job as a vet tech. She also shared what it's like helping people without homes and their furry friends. The question, how did you start working with animals? "Ever since I was a kid, my mission in life has been to save animals. Growing up in Long Beach, California, I had a mini farm in my backyard. I would take in stray, sick, or injured animals all the time, like rabbits, chickens, and, of course, cats and dogs. I would rehabilitate them with help from my parents and then find homes for the animals. Once I took in a pregnant cat so she wouldn't have her babies outside in the cold. All the kittens were adopted. Next questions, what do vet techs do? A vet tech examines an animal before the veterinarian sees it. We take measurements called vital signs. For example, we check the pet's temperature, blood pressure, and heart rate. Blood pressure measures how strong the blood moves through the body's vessels and arteries. Heart rate is the number of times a heart beats per minute. These measurements help us know if a pet is healthy. For example, low blood pressure could indicate a disease. We also give the correct dose of medicine to animals that need it. We take x-rays and clean teeth, too. Vet techs help bandage broken legs and help with surgery. We do everything that a nurse does for human patients. But we have to know how to do it for many kinds of animals. I mainly work with dogs and cats, but I've also handled ferrets, rabbits, and other animals. Question, why is it important to care for the pets of unhoused people? People love their pets very much. For those without homes, their pets can be a source of joy during a difficult time. One pet owner we helped through Project Street Vet was named Justin. He had a cat named Justin had found behind a dumpster as a kitten and raised him. He would skateboard with the cat in a little carrier. One day, got hit by a car. Luckily, we were able to save his life. We also had a chance to help Justin, too. He was having problems with the tent he lived in, so we brought him a new one and a collar for Justin cried. We were all crying because he had never received that kind of help from anyone. Question, what should kids know about caring for animals as a career? As a kid, I never knew there were doctors and nurses just for animals. I also learned that as a vet tech, you can specialize in different types of care. You could help an animal recover from injuries. You can treat animals battling cancer. You can specialize in zoo medicine and work with elephants and tigers. There's a big world of veterinary careers. And the final question, what do you love most about your job? Not always easy. Sometimes I need to set up an online fundraiser to collect money for a pet surgery. Other times we can't save an animal. Things like that can be hard and make you feel sad or frustrated. But for me, doing this work is so worth it. It's a beautiful thing to be a voice for animals who are innocent and helpless. And on the back page of this issue of SuperStem, there are amazing facts about the amazing eraser. Ask your parent, teacher, or guardian to go over the illustrations and the facts about erasers with you. And that does complete the September issue of Scholastic's SuperStem. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.